Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Monday, March 15th joint meeting of the City Council and Planning Commission. I believe we have full quorum on both sides, and we'll begin our meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible.
Joint meeting discussion items. First one is a presentation from the county on the land use element update process. First of all, Nancy, was there anything that you wanted to say in introduction or?
No.
Okay. All right.
Bye. Thank you.
Okay. Presentation from the county on land use element update process. Mr. Gibson, is this yours?
Well, it is mine to introduce.
Okay.
I want to thank you for providing time on your schedule for doing this. I know I interact with various of you in different roles, but I think as you've been following what's been going on in land use planning, there is a lot going on. The county itself is working on a number of important parts of its general plan, as well as the normal flow of projects. But as we deal with a lot of things that are coming down from the state in terms of our response to climate change, AB 32, SB 375, the typical alphabet soup, we're seeing the need for greater and greater cooperation on an interjurisdictional level. And so that's really the motivation for being here today. We'll introduce Chuck Stevenson, who's the division manager of our long-range planning group in the Planning and Building Department, and Mike Wolken here in a minute. We are working on many fronts that are going to involve the county's interaction with the cities and the special districts in ways that we really haven't in my knowledge of the government interactions in this county. What we're here to talk about today is a planning area that encompasses a huge amount of the unincorporated area of the county, specifically those outside our urban and village reserve lines. So it touches rural areas on the edge of every city and every special district in this county. Chuck and Mike have made the rounds. We've met with Mayor Peters and staff a while back to sort of outline what our plans are for this. We're back today and very glad. This is the first, Chuck was telling me, this is the first instance of a council or planning commission actually formal meeting and taking this meeting, and we really appreciate it. But because this is such an important and large area of the county, and because it comes right up to your city limits, we think it's particularly important that we spend time with you and understand your issues and help you understand our issues. And I think that that's going to make it a much more efficient process, the details of which Mr. Stevenson, I think, is ready to lead us into. So we thank you.
Large undertaking for the county. However, it's important that we try to streamline our process, and one of the main motivations, as Mike will explain, is to take what we currently have, which is 15 planning areas that were intended to be updated individually, we've determined would take far too long to ever complete. So that process doesn't work. We're now going back to one large rural area plan, and it'll have chapters and it'll have sub areas, but we're trying to streamline our process. Mike will get into that in a little more detail. We wanted to have a brief presentation and then have opportunity to talk to you and have any of your questions answered. So I'll at that point just turn it over to Mike. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck. Hello, Mayor Peters and members of the council and commission. My name is Mike Wolken, and I'm going to do a very brief presentation on our land use and circulation elements update and how that's proceeding and what it is. Okay, this is what it is very simply. It's a comprehensive update of the land use and circulation parts of our general plan for the unincorporated rural areas of the county. So we're just dealing with the unincorporated and just the rural. So we're not dealing with our towns such as Napomo or Oceano or Cayugas. Those will be dealt with after we finish this rural area update. So why are we doing this? Our general plan land use element was last comprehensively updated in 1980, so that makes it about almost 30 years old today. And we do have an opportunity as we do this project to streamline our plan and in the process save money on future updates of that general plan land use element. We also have an opportunity to take a more regional approach to our planning and deal with issues that are now emerging, such as the need to reduce greenhouse gases due to state mandates, reduce vehicle miles traveled, deal with water resources issues that are becoming more and more critical, and also issues like jobs and housing. And those are really more effectively done taking a big picture regional look rather than a more piecemeal planning area by planning area look through each of our 15 area plans. And I'll go over some of the key aims of our update. Like Chuck said, we'd like to consolidate our 15 different bound, our unincorporated communities. And also, we would like to help sustain agriculture and natural resources and essentially plan for our growth so that our growth is within our resources. And also to take a more regional approach to things like housing and jobs and infrastructure and those kind of issues like water that are really dealt with beyond planning area boundaries. They really, you need to take a big picture look to deal with those things, and that's what we hope to accomplish with this update. Also, one of the key things that we're doing in our update is to identify through a geographic information system modeling process those areas that are least constrained environmentally, physically, and otherwise for services, for example, to define where the most suitable areas for potential community expansion might be in the future. And those areas, based on our research, we found that there's probably a need for some modest expansion of our unincorporated towns and communities. We're not going to identify any areas for potential expansion around the cities, and we won't be rezoning those areas at this time. But what our research has shown to date is that in order to accommodate the projected growth through the year 2035, which is the timeline for our effort here, it can't all be accommodated through infill of our existing unincorporated towns. So there's going to need to be some amount of area set aside for potential expansion in the future around our unincorporated towns. And finally, one of the key aims of our land use and circulation element update is to promote a high level of coordination with cities and special districts. And we've already started that, doing that by having informal contacts with cities and CSDs, and this actually is our first formal presentation. We'll be continuing our coordination through our public outreach efforts, which are getting underway now, and really throughout our update process, we'll be seeking collaboration and coordination with cities, with special districts, and with other agencies. Modeling, we're taking a number of different constraints, maybe 15 or 20 or more, slope, for example, and landslide hazards and liquefaction hazards and agricultural and other environmental resources, and weighting them and then overlaying them graphically on each other to come up with a map of least constrained to most constrained areas for potential development. And that's kind of a scientific approach to determining what areas are most suitable and least suitable for future development. And so that information will be available for areas throughout the county, actually, and it'll be available to cities to use for their own purposes. And the county is, through our land use element, circulation element update, planning to accommodate our own fair share of growth, so-called, future growth through the year 2035. So this is not an effort to take all the growth and force it onto the cities. We're looking at unincorporated areas only and for targeted expansion around our unincorporated towns, and that should be of benefit to the to everyone in the county, actually. So the backdrop for this is several major challenges that we're dealing with, that everyone's dealing with in the county. We have critical water resource deficiencies. Infrastructure such as water and roads is also a deficiency, and the cost of that infrastructure keeps going up. Sustaining our agricultural and natural resources is continuing to be a challenge, especially as you have more growth going into rural areas, as we're seeing. There's traffic challenges and increasing vehicle miles traveled, and that's another thing we need to reduce in order to meet our state mandates for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. We have to somehow find a way to reduce the amount of vehicle miles that people are traveling throughout the county. At the same time, we have to assure a vital economy, and we need to figure out where growth will occur. By the year 2030, it's estimated that we'll need about 10 to 11,000 additional housing units just in the unincorporated areas alone. And so the question is, where are those housing units going to go? If, as we've seen, could conflict with agricultural development, that kind of development is going to make it even more challenging to address these issues up on the screen. So all of these things are going to be dealt with in our land use and circulation elements update. And we've already started the update, and we actually held a scoping meeting with our own planning commission in January, and we're beginning an extensive public outreach effort right now that will run for the next several months. And we'll be releasing a first draft of a plan at the beginning of next year, starting our hearings with our own planning commission towards the end of next year, actually, and preparing a final environmental impact report. And it won't be before 2012 that we get up to our Board of Supervisors. So you can see it's a lengthy process. It's comprehensive and complicated. We are proceeding, and we want to involve and collaborate with the cities and special districts and others. Adoption is slated for towards the middle of 2012. And we have a lot of information about this update on our website, which is slowplanning.org. If you look actually it's not under news anymore, but we have a quick link to plans in process, and you can find it that way. I'm the project manager. We have other staff listed up there who are working on the project as well with contacts. We've also handed out some information to you, and the website and the contact information is on those handouts. And one of the handouts has a list of frequently asked questions that should be helpful. It might tell you exactly what and what as part of this update. So I believe that's it. So we'll be happy to answer any questions that you might have about what we're doing.
I've got one right off the bat. What form will your public outreach take, and how will our community be able to be involved in that?
Okay. We're going to use a variety of public outreach techniques, both conventional, like press releases and workshops, and also some non-traditional new kinds of techniques, like maybe having a Facebook, and that'll include interviewing stakeholders and helping facilitate workshops and helping us with all these the media relations and so forth. And so we'll be collaborating, meeting with agencies and cities again. We'll have public workshops. There'll be some regional workshops. So there'll be a variety of ways that people can be involved.
Okay, so you'll be notifying our bodies about this, and we can notify our community at our meetings as
yes.
well, right? Okay, and what kind of input are you going to be looking for from the public? For instance, we're a city with borders and no sphere of influence, and have some areas outside of town that might want to be incorporated? Is that the kind of input you're going to be looking for?
Yes, although we were actually not intending to do any kind of rezoning or land use changes around the boundaries, around the borders of cities, or in their spheres of influence.
But I mean, if some of our outlying areas want to be involved, is that something, is that kind of input that you look for or not?
Well, certainly. Okay. We're looking for input on that. We're looking for input on the policies that are going to be part of the update. We're going to be holding some workshops where we present the results of our research, where we're looking for kind of a visioning what people see as the future in the year 2035 for the county and the unincorporated areas. And so we'll be asking people to help create that vision, and then also to identify different land use scenarios to reach that vision. So okay. That'll be happening.
I just want people to understand what kind of information they should be wanting to bring to you. So
right. That'll
what
be happening focus? Later in the summer, probably, as we get into the workshops and presenting the results of our research. And, right. So,
okay.
I wonder if I can just chime in on that. We certainly want to know from the cities what your plans are as we look down the road, as we look toward doing regional planning. You know, there's not a regional planning authority that's going to impose a regional plan on the entirety of this county. So I describe it as success in meeting, for instance, the mandates of SB 375 is going to be a process of aligning our self-interest. So we absolutely want to know what the INTRAFCO process. I'd urge you to get a hold of that. You can contact LAFCO or contact my office, and we can get a hold of it. But it talks about this joint planning effort at our boundaries. So other issues of interest certainly are your interest in your water supply, which some of which a number of your sources of water lie outside your city limits in the unincorporated areas of the county. I know you have concerns about them. We want to hear about that, and we'll fold that into our land use planning authority. Issues with your infrastructure and how growth should or should not occur near your cities are also things we want to hear about. So at this point, we're very early, and I think you can see this is really a new approach, I think. This has not happened before. I don't think you've ever had the county in your chambers talking about coordination with your city planning effort. But we're interested in moving forward on it. I'd urge you as elected and appointed officials certainly to contact me if you have interest. I know we'll have some staff-to-staff contacts, but it's going to be a long conversation. And the adoption of the plan in, what did you say, August of 12? You know, it's sort of like the March Madness. We'll start a pool on that, but but the adoption in March 12 is not the end of the process. We're going to need to keep adapting because the challenges won't end at that point. So.
Okay. Other questions? Anyone? Over here? Jared?
Yeah. What mechanisms do you intend to use to incentivize or create disincentives to control the growth into certain areas?
Yeah, there are a few ways to do that. Probably the main way that growth might be better directed is through adjusting the rates of growth. The county has a growth management ordinance that meters out building permits at a rate of 2.3% per year. It's countywide with a few special provisions for certain areas. One approach would be to use growth management ordinance to direct more growth, and we're not talking about radical changes, but a little bit higher proportion of growth to the urban unincorporated areas than the rural areas. So that's one way. There's also controls that on subdivisions, for example, in areas that are identified as being, you know, appropriate areas for increased rural growth. We found that through our research that there are about 12,000 vacant parcels in our unincorporated rural areas, which is a substantial amount, plenty of vacant lots for growth on just those lots without creating even new or more lots listed as part of our update.
On the question of incentive, a couple of bigger level policy issues. One of them is infrastructure, and a lot of the conversation goes to if we want to redirect growth or if we want to achieve a different growth pattern, we have to make it easy to do the right thing. That is, we need to make it easy to have growth occur in those areas which we see it to be appropriate. So staff is working on an infrastructure policy, again, a new kind of coordination between our planning staff and our public works staff, trying to get that in place. But the other technique, which really does fall toward the matter of an incentive, is the concept of transferring development credit. Transferring development, 12,000 unbuilt lots in our rural areas, and those are just the ones we know about. We have a process by which lots that are from antiquated subdivisions may be actually legally entitled to be recognized as such, the so-called certificate of compliance. There are unknown numbers of those out there, and we're concerned. We've been working for quite a while to try to figure out how to retire the development potential where it's inappropriate, move it to where it is. And we had a transfer development credits ordinance, came into being in 1992, I believe. Recent action within the last year or so has basically put that one on hold because the way it was crafted wasn't working quite right. For one thing, it was creating more development than it was retiring. So another one of the many projects that will come out of this land use and circulation element is the concept of what should replace transfer development credits. We have enough subdivided lots in this county. The question is really where are they and what size are they? Transfer development credits might be replaced by the concept of land banking, which is a more flexible and many think more powerful way of saving those areas or preventing development in certain areas and allowing development in others. So we'll see that coming up, and you'll be hearing more about that. The key concept here that I think is really interesting is how do we consider transferring development potential across city limits if there are cities who are interested in taking development. City of Paso Robles brought forward a really interesting idea to the Council of Governments a couple years ago now, I think, which was, hey, you know, with the regional housing numbers coming down, we could take more than what might be considered.
We are doing things through our housing element and through other programs directed by the board to increase incentives or opportunities for development and affordable housing in our urban areas. We're not dealing with urban areas in this project, but we're looking at things like, for example, rezoning areas for more multifamily housing, looking at mobile home park zoning, for example, and also planned development ordinance to give more flexibility for development of different kinds of housing types in our urban areas. So those are other things that we're doing as well, not part of this project.
Nancy?
I may be jumping ahead here, but one of the things you mentioned twice as challenges is water and watershed. And as I'm sure you know, the majority of our local water comes from the Chorro Valley, which is out in the county. As you look at that, will there be any incentives to help us with some of the water issues maybe that we have out there, getting that water into town and cleaning it, those kinds of things?
It's something we're going to be looking at, yes. I don't have any ideas right now off the top of my head, but yes, we want to hear your concerns about those kind of issues, and we do need to take that into account because we're going to be looking at our watersheds and the health of our watersheds, and they're of course critical to water supply, and so we're looking for ideas, and we will be looking for ideas to incorporate into the plan to help sustain healthy watersheds and improve our watersheds so that we can have water supply. So
okay.
I don't have any ideas for you, but we're looking for your ideas.
Any other questions?
Suggestions?
Yep. Okay. John?
As far as next steps are concerned, then, do you encourage us to schedule some workshops and sort of take the initiative and invite you, or should we just wait until we're notified by the county to that you're coming out to hold a workshop and engage us?
I think if we could work together maybe on some workshops and scheduling some workshops, that would be good. We're having we plan to have a few regional workshops, but I don't see why we couldn't actually participate in some additional workshops if the city's willing to do those. We have.
I forgot about that. I have to be at it about 6:15. The last two would probably be where you might. I don't know for sure if you'd want me to weigh in, but those are probably two that I would weigh in on. The other ones, I don't know if you'd need me.
Well, what I was going to do is bring those two up if everyone's agreeable to that, so that he can leave and not be missing out on information from him. Okay, so we'll go to the involvement of the Planning Commission and the PROCON analysis for the sale of city property. What exactly were you looking for on that one? I'm looking to Planning Commission members.
I believe that was originally John Diodati's issue, so let's let him address that if he doesn't mind.
Thank you. And Mrs. Johnson is correct. The thought just occurred to me as I saw a couple properties come up for sale that are in the city surplus that the city council and in their discussions might be approaching it more from the fiscal impacts of the sale of that property. And us as a planning commission board could be able to set aside the fiscal emphasis and look at it from a planning perspective and simply offer the city council recommendations as to, like I said, the pros and cons of putting that property on the market and allow, again, additional input from the citizenry to come out and speak on behalf of that potential sale and provide additional input for your council's decision.
Okay, I guess I'd look at the council. Is this something that you would like to consider?
I don't think we normally have a shortage of people expressing their viewpoints when we have property available. And as much as I appreciate and recognize your direction, I believe that when I deal with the issues, and I would think the rest of us do, that we look at all aspects before we put properties up for sale, including the potential land use. I don't think we're just focused on the one financial aspect, but I don't see it as a high priority in directing things that way when the Planning Commission has a lot of other things we can't even get on the planning track towards.
Ben?
On the other hand, you are the advisory body to the City Council in our planning issues, and so if we don't want to formally say you do that, I think you should take every initiative to do that. You certainly don't need our permission. And if the body wants to do that formally, I don't have an issue with doing it formally either.
Well, I guess you're speaking specifically of Brannigan's and the Cloisters when you talk about that.
That's the most recent property, but there's for sale right now the Cloisters. Oh, you did say Cloisters, yes, correct,
yeah,
both of those.
And I'm sure you know the history behind it and the intent of the proceeds from the sale of that was to go toward the completion of the fire station. And it didn't work out, so we had to pursue the USDA loan, and now we're getting a little bit of interest in it. And what our hope is to pay as much of that USDA loan as possible so we can use the Measure Qs for other things that it's supposed to be for. And the other property... I'm probably not telling you anything you don't know, but it was a challenge to sell, and it was a challenge to get people interested in getting that property. And so we've looked at things through the last couple of years, and although it's not everything I want in the sale, then I think it's the majority's opinion that we need to go ahead and do what we're doing to fill a building that's been empty for years in that part, and realize a little bit of revenue from it with some stipulations in the cell that's going to provide for other things that might attract folks. So, you know, it was kind of frustrating on our side because of the lack of interest in these places. Now that we've finally got it rolling a little bit, and we've earmarked that money for certain things. And that's not to say that we don't want to hear input. You know, I think that's great. We'd love to. The chance of you bringing us something that we hadn't thought about is there, and so we would. But we don't have a whole lot of options with those two properties right now, so we're following through with the offers that we have, even though they're not the best that we would hope to get for them. But that's where we're at.
Well, and I can tell you for sure that the Market Street property uses of it were discussed quite a bit, because I was on the council when we purchased it, and the things that we wanted to use it for that just never were able to happen financially, economically, whatever. But however, with that said, there are a number of smaller pieces of property that we use. In fact, Betty and I looked at one with an idea of low-income housing on one strip of property, and things like that I think would be very good to have your input on, because you may be able to come up with some sort of a plan that would be workable on property that we already own, and perhaps getting it available. And
surplus, and we begin to receive offers, those would be very difficult because we're allowed in closed session under the real estate negotiations, and we wouldn't be able to do that with the Planning Commission. So that would make it very difficult for them to weigh in. I mean, like you said, the Brannigans had many different little complicated issues regarding elevators and lot line adjustments and others to get it done that then began into the real property negotiation. So, but the initial, we do have a list of surplus. It's on a staff list of things to do to bring that to council. It hasn't seen the light of day to get to you, but we do have surplus property. We've inventoried it and want to sometime bring that forward. So the actual list to kind of go over, if you wanted recommendations on that for more of the public hearing process, from a staff standpoint, at least from my standpoint, that would be fine.
Okay. So that list is available, and if you want to add it to your list of things to do.
To do, yes. And actually, historically speaking, with the Cloisters property, there was apparently an issue with being able to sell it as a big lot, and so that came back to Planning Commission, and we did the initial work on subdividing that property, so that was input that we had into how that property was to be sold.
Yeah, but that property doesn't have much of a decision to be made. There's only one use for it. It has to be residential, it has to be part of the Cloisters, and it has to meet their CC&Rs. So the issue there is not the different things you could use it for or not use. Other property could have other different possible uses that you could at least examine when you're going whether it's surplus or not.
From my point of view, it wasn't so much that we weighed in on the fiscal impacts of it. It was more the sense that maybe from our vantage point, we could maybe condition the sale in one way or another so that we could get a added public benefit through the sale process prior to putting it up for offer, such as, let's just use the Brannigan property, for instance. We could, it may have been possible to set an easement and a requirement for a certain level of vertical transportation between the Embarcadero to Market Street. That requirement may have been helpful, just for an instance.
That's part of the agreement. Not only for that easement, but to also for pay for the vertical access up and down at a cost of, I think it's the bond is, or letter of credit is for about $250,000. Sir, we've been trying to set up for about 3 or 4 months a meeting to go up staff with Coastal Commission, meet with them and find out where a number of issues are at, what we can do to improve communications with the resignation of the public service director. We've got to pick new dates now so that the interim public service director can attend and redo that. But I think what we've lost in the last couple of years is definitely the communications going back and forth, and that's just staff cuts and other things that we need to try to communicate better with them. One of the ideas is a lobbyist. The problem is that does cost, and with our budget, it's just been kind of out of the question that certainly most small communities that have the money do have some type of lobbyist that's up there that can easily have access to the staff and can find out where projects are and where we can help get them through. So as we move forward, one of the ideas to do is to cut out of the herd, I think it's on your agenda Monday, is the cell tower ordinance, to look at that and cut that out all by itself. And the other one is the
Well, and I know we talked... We talked about sharing the cost with other coastal cities, and I know that there were some difficulties with that as well.
It's a tough shared process because everybody has different issues. Gizmo's issue is completely different than our issues, and when they're working on ours and when they're working on theirs, it's more what they like. It's just a time and contract. You know, time is okay. Time spent. So, Mr. Gibson might get what I believe.
Any questions for Mr. Schultz before he
leaves? I was just going to say that this seems like a really ideal time to get to work on this issue again, because we have a totally new planning department who haven't even seen this project. We have a planning commission. This thing came before any of us were here. So, you know, we have some fresh new people ready to look at this, and I think we need to move forward in any way we can.
You question whether our 2005, which was supposed to be our update, is already mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, do we need to start all over again?
My perspective on this is that we need to do approach it from what it was before. It's hard for them to judge and compare, and that this body, that body, has not seen it. And that I think we can go with what we have and shoot up the pieces. And I think we might have a better chance at amending those things that we find critical by culling the herd, as Mr. Schultz described it.
Okay, Supervisor Gibson, did you have any input on this topic?
A couple of things. Okay. Dealing with the Coastal Commission is an art unto itself, and that that matter of communication is absolutely key. One thing I was going to offer is that if your planning staff would like informal consultation with county planning staff, who's spent a lot of time moving both projects and LCP amendments through the Coastal Commission, I will, on their behalf, offer you a chance to chat, give you some names if you're interested. But it is a long process, and your concerns are shared by many cities and counties. In fact, that led last August to a joint workshop between coastal commissioners, representatives of the League of Cities, and representatives of CSAC. I participated in that. You might want to actually catch the video of that, because a lot of concerns about the amount of time it took, the level of detail that is being asked of small planning staffs, and the general, it's almost... almost need a translator in some ways. The things that the Coastal Commission staff and commission cares about are a little bit different than those of us who deal at the local level. Excuse me. Out of that, though, did come a commitment to do a few things that should improve the process, one of which is to put a model LCP language up on the Coastal Commission's website. Again, I can work it through CSAC, or your league representative should be able to find that. A lot of times LCPs just show up there in a format that makes it hard for their staff to process, and they are very much in understaffed situation and furlough days, and it's making it very difficult. You know, the question of specific amendments one by one versus an entire LCP, I don't really have much to say about that, but I do know that coastal staff asks a certain kind of questions, a certain level of questions, and getting with them early makes all the difference in the world. So, again, be happy to help with our experience.
Okay. Any input on that, anyone?
It's an interesting concept. I don't think I would be able to weigh in on it fully with today, but I think it would be, it's certainly worth exploring. It's a little sad that we'd have to resort to a continuous amendment. On the other hand, it may be what we need to do, and if we can figure out a process to speed things along, that might be an option, but I think I would have to have further discussion on that. It's an interesting question.
I just remember anecdotally Mr. Ambo on numerous occasions saying, well, there is something in the plan at the Coastal Commission, but we don't have it. And so that type of expediency to move some of those important things forward, I think, would be worth looking at, too.
I just want to make sure we had assurances from appropriate coastal staff that we were going down the right path. I trust, Betty, that you had a phone call with someone there who was on good authority, but letter in hand or something that giving us the correct guidance, and if we do go down this path, we should have tangible results.
Yep. Maybe possibly a subcommittee between a staff, with a staff member, a planning commission member, and a city council member may be able to work together and contact the Coastal Commission to find out what we need to do and what the best process would be. And maybe that subcommittee could look for, you know, better ways to do it. So I couldn't tell you right now without, you know, without further investigation of what the best way would be. I think we could find out.
I think it's probably fairly obvious that at least part of the problem is that nobody on this planning commission has seen what's sitting at the Coastal Commission. So we don't know at this point whether we need to start over again, as Betty suggested, which may be what we need to do. I mean, the thing could be totally outdated. But we do need to move forward in one way or another to find out what we're going to do next.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
I will, I think Rob Schultz talked a
little bit with Mike Watson, and then his supervisor with Dan Carl, and then his supervisor, Charles Lester. So trying to put all three of those in a meeting is a difficult task, but we'll get that completed. They have a lot of furloughs, days, and you know, they have to keep up with their permit cycle and cutbacks from the state. The long-term planning is not one of their high priorities. It's what almost the cities are complaining about. But, you know, it is something we need to look at. I think Council Member Winholz says that is a possibility. I think what we can do is we can go up there and talk to them candidly about what they think and come back with just the different options. Okay. Certainly, I think that's one on the table, is where are we at, and let's look at it again and see what process we'd have to go through to change it or to make it so that they can get through the process. But I think what Council Member Winholz is saying is they look at it, and it's the matrix on that is very complicated as to what has been taken out and what's been kept, and there might be a better way to look at it.
Well, and the frustrating thing about that is that we did all of that to make it simpler, and as a result, it's a very complicated process for them. But I agree with John. I think we definitely should have something. We don't want to lose our place in line. That's the last thing we want to happen. If we pull it back, I want to make sure that we can still get things going and not lose that. Well, not lose our space. Nothing's happening, but I don't want to lose where we are anyway. Okay, anything else on that one? Are you okay? All right. Update on downtown visioning. Who's going to do that one? Jerry? Okay.
Well, we've had some progress on this, and the committee of Noah and John and I, we've got a contract signed with Cal Poly, and it's in progress. The staff contact person has been assigned. We're in the process of setting up an advisory committee, and we'll have our first meeting on Thursday. So in the process, there will be several meetings that the community will be able to offer their opinions and their input on. The first meeting is going to be April 5th. This is with the advisory committee, and this will include a site visit by Cal Poly, and including a walk, you know, a look through town. On April 14th, it's between an adjustment of that. After that, there will be the advisory committee will meet with the class at their, you know, at Cal Poly, and be able to review what's the work that's been done up to that point, and that's at a date uncertain. And then Monday, June 7th, we were scheduled for a presentation to the Planning Commission, or a joint planning commission and city council meeting. That's to be determined. So what we're going to be looking forward to is community input and a pretty robust dialogue between the students and the community. And there'll be a website set up whether it's on Cal Poly, where the Cal Poly hosts it, or whether the city hosts it, there will be links between both of those, and that's to be set up. Cal Poly is going to be creating a flyer to publicize this, and we'll be putting these around the community. So things are starting to move, and it's going to be pretty exciting. And John, do you have anything to add?
I don't think so. Meeting with Cal Poly. Well, first, let me thank your council and staff for finding the funds to get this project going. Cal Poly is really excited to be working with this community, and I get a really good feeling that they're going to put a lot into this and really help us enhance the downtown area and take some good steps in the right direction.
What has your outreach been to the business people downtown? Are they contacting them early on?
We've been contacting them on a personal basis, and we've gotten good response, and they're good. We've got a group of people. I don't really want to name their names right now because we haven't got final commitments from them, but we're getting a pretty wide range of people types, I guess you'd call them, that we're trying to get the input from and have them on the advisory committee. And Noah can add to that also.
Yeah, actually, you just said it all right there. The one thing I would like you to talk a little more about is how this effort is phased into the long-term plan with where we'd like to go with the project.
We've renamed this process, and that will be brought forward to the Planning Commission, and we will work with the community and the Planning Commission to bring forward that plan, and then that to be codified, and then the phase three would be the implementation. And so that's how we see breaking this process down into three logical steps to move forward so that we can get this actually implemented and, things done on the ground.
Okay. Any questions from council?
Yes, I would hope that you would invite personally, like maybe one of you go to the different advisory bodies, and I'm thinking particularly of PWAB, and encourage them to show up to these walkthroughs and tours, and because they're a ready source of public that are already committed to public input and service.
These community meetings will be open to the public, and so they will be the advisory boards would be a vital source of input.
And the Merchants Association and the Chamber, I assume.
Yes. We've already contacted them.
Okay. Yeah. Other questions, comments, Claudia?
Anything? Rick? I did have a follow-up question. As Mr. Lerb mentioned, the final meeting presentation right now is scheduled for June 7th, which fits in with the Cal Poly's end of quarter schedule. The question is, that is a regular scheduled Planning Commission meeting. Do we want to plan on having a joint meeting for that presentation, or can we as the council, are we comfortable with just showing up unofficially, participating as observers with that meeting, and then receiving a recommendation or review from the Planning Commission at our meeting the following week? If we have a preference, it may be good for us to start to consider that now.
I wouldn't have any problem with it being a joint meeting, depending on what their workload is at the time. How's the rest of the council feel?
Okay, so we could leave that loose.
Depending
on
your workload, if that can work out, that would be great. First part of your meeting.
Mayor, excuse me, Mayor Peters.
Yes.
Can we wait? Because that's also the day before elections, so I think it may be a busy week.
It's all over by then, except the voting, right? Okay. Any other comments on that one?
Well, then what's the conclusion here? Are we going to formally ask for a joint meeting or just let us be on our own and you guys give us advice after the fact?
I think we're looking
and
for
we'll
a joint meeting.
And we'll watch it on TV?
We're looking for a joint meeting depending on their workload. If that works out, we'll have a joint meeting.
Well, what about our workload?
Yeah. There will be input, you know, from the community, too, at that point, too, on all of these.
Right. Just a final highlight. Cal Poly, the professor that's taking the lead, Mr. Dr. Tokur, is part of his focus and background training is community action, dialogue, and engagement. So it's going to be the two workshops that we have are going to be very much focused on breaking out into smaller groups, dialogue, interactive project planning. So it should be pretty fun to come out to. And he has some interesting ideas about our downtown tour at our first meeting as well. So we hope the public will turn out and have a good time.
All right. Next item is the update on AB
801. I have a question.
I'm sorry.
Probably for Mr. Schultz since he's still here. It's 6 o'clock and that's our scheduled time for Planning Commission. Do we need to do that or can we go through these and then do our meeting?
As I understand, you don't have any public hearing items on your
right. They need to be continued.
You can certainly, if you can finish it up in the next 10 or 15 minutes, I suggest you that. But if you think it's going to be, you know, another 45-minute time frame, then you should take a break and do the planning first. But I don't mind going over the 5 or 10, 15 minutes.
Okay.
There's no public hearings.
I don't really have a feel for how long the presentations on the other two items are, so I don't really know.
Gentlemen, what do you think? Is it a long discussion on these last two or pretty quick?
Could you speak in the mic, please?
Turn on your mic.
Come on, rookie.
I was
talking to my other boss
here.
Over here. As far as the tree replacement program, I think I can probably update you with an email on that. I actually found some guidelines for that addressed my needs, and I can certainly speak to more about that later. But I don't think
I'd love to discuss trees. However,
okay. Well, why don't we go ahead and break? Let's open your meeting, continue your items, and then we'll come back to this. That's only going to take a couple of minutes.
Right, probably about 2 minutes.
Yeah, so let's do that.
All right.
So do we have to adjourn this meeting to do that, or just? All right, we're going to continue this meeting until after the official Planning Commission meeting.
Thank you.
Do you need a motion? No? No.
With that, we will open the Monday, March 15th meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission and call that meeting to order.
Meeting, the City Council whole heard two appeals, one on the parcel map at Anagave. City Council upheld the Planning Commission but modified the condition and eliminated the requirement for the second story being 80% of the first story and reduced the square footage to 2,000 square foot as a maximum home size. The second item was the appeal of a minor use permit to convert residential to commercial use. The City Council upheld the Planning Commission's decision approving the conversion and looked to accommodating the parking in the front parking area. On the upcoming City Council meeting on Monday, March 22nd, items of interest will be consideration of proposed transit changes, again, review of the draft ordinance regulating wireless cell towers, a report on the status of A-frame sign program, and looking at appointing a subcommittee for the Choro and Mora water rights and licenses. Additionally, one of my favorite items is the North Main Street bike lanes, an authorization to execute a contract with Caltrans to accept $480,000 in ERA funding or America Recovery Act funding, I'm sorry, for that project. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Gentlemen, any questions? Yay, that bike lane took a while. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. You have a question? No. All right. Thank you, Mr. Leibig. Public comment. Does anybody wish to address the Planning Commission this evening? Looks like no one, so we will close public comment. Consent calendar, and that's the minutes. Any questions or concerns about the minutes? Or perhaps a motion to approve them as they are? Don't all talk at once, guys. Yes, Jamie. To our April 5th meeting, I'm sorry. May I have a motion that we do that?
I move that we continue these items, these three items, A, B, and C, to April 5th, 2010.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, old business, current planning processing list, and advanced work list. Questions? Not tonight. Okay, good. Adjournment then, unless you have new business. With that, we will adjourn to the next regularly scheduled Planning Commission at the Veterans Memorial Building, 209 Surf Street, on Monday, April 5th at 6 p.m. And with that, this meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
All right, and we will now reconvene the joint meeting. And we are at item 3, which is an update on AB 811. Who's handling this one?
Good evening, Bob. Madam Mayor.
Okay.
Rob Leibig, City Engineer. I also want to take this opportunity to introduce Cindy Jacinth will be giving us a brief update. Yet Cindy has not been formally introduced to the City Council or Planning Commission. Ms. Jacinth has had quite a bit of background in community development work. She's worked for People's Self-Help Housing as a project manager in their rental development. She worked on the development of the Sequoia Apartments in Morro Bay, her tenure at People's Self-Help Housing. She has much experience in the State Department of Housing, CDBG and Home Programs, and the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, Section 202 and 811 programs. She also has experience in grant writing, administration, and coordination of funding sources. So with that, I'll turn it over to Cindy to give us a brief update on AB 811. Sorry.
Would you prefer that I go to the podium?
Welcome, Cindy.
It's on.
Okay, thank you. Well, as you know, at the February 16th City Council meeting, City Council approved a resolution authorizing Sacramento County to receive the Supplemental Energy Program grant on behalf of the City of Morro Bay and the City of Morro Bay make energy efficient improvements. What is going on right now is the various cities in the county are meeting and work is underway to roll out the program in summer of 2010. The website for this, it's www.californiafirst.org, and the City of Morro Bay, along with the other participating cities in this pilot program in the county of San Luis Obispo, are working with Renewable Funding. Renewable Funding is the program administrator for this grant, and we will be meeting with them on Wednesday, March 17th at 1 o'clock at County of San Luis Obispo offices, and they're working with all the different cities and the county to develop our marketing, rolling out the program, and identifying the next steps that we need to take to continue with this program. And of course, this program, the way that it will be financed is through bond financing, and the property owner would, the cost would be put on as a property tax assessment. So when the homeowner or the commercial owner sells the property, then that stays with the property, and the tax assessments stay with the property. That concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
Okay, any questions for Cindy?
Just a clarification for those listening at home, that would be completely voluntary on
completely
behalf of
voluntary.
The...
Completely voluntary. It's a way for property owners to make energy efficient improvements to their property that they own.
I confess I zoned for a minute. Did you give a date when this would be available?
There's no certain date right now. The goal is to start taking applications in the summer of 2010, so it's coming up quickly.
Is it an indefinite program, or is there a sunset?
Right now, there is a sunset. Well, I wouldn't use that word, sunset. The grant funds need to be expended by the summer of 2011, I believe, is the date, and I could verify that exact date. But it's a pilot program, so based on the success of the 14 counties that are in the pilot program, and that is to fund administration, marketing, legal fees. The amount of money that is available to property owners has not been determined, because the more people that apply, then the larger the bond sale would be.
But you hear sometimes about some cities have been oversubscribed, then that won't happen here because we'll be able to meet our demand, or is there potential for us not to meet our demand?
No, that won't happen. With the meetings that I've had with the County of San Luis Obispo, they want the more people to apply, the better, because it's the bond sale will be larger, and it's just a matter of marketing and getting the word out. And as I said earlier, for anybody watching the council joint meeting tonight, they can go to californiafirst.org for more information. It's a user-friendly website. It's just active and went live as of this week, and there's more detailed information on that website.
Okay. Maybe this is a comment. This is a really important program, and I'm really happy to see Morro Bay involved in it. One of the things I'd like to ask or even propose is if we could put an amendment on it that either a percentage or the major components are American manufactured. There's a huge problem in the solar industry right now with Chinese and foreign panels being dumped in the U.S. And if we want to support this industry, we should have a requirement that the major components of the system, of these systems that are installed, should be American made.
And where will people go to apply for these?
They would go to californiafirst.org initially to get some information. During our meeting with Renewable Funding, the program administrator, they're working with each of the cities so that we can develop our own customized website that works for us. And so as we're developing this, the application materials would be available on the city website as well.
Okay, so for our citizens who are not on the web, we do have some people in Morro Bay, hard as it may be to believe, that don't use the internet yet. Will they come into the office, or what do they do?
They can come into the public services office at 955 Shasta to get more information.
As long as
public works contracts do have a Buy America clause in the contract itself. So I'm thinking that maybe somebody already thought of this, but we'll check to make sure and provide our comments to the program administrator.
And one other comment. Councilmember Winholz had asked if there was a sunset date, and I just found in my notes the materials that we received from Renewable Funding says that grant funds must be expended by March 31st, 2012. So we will be, actively seeking applications.
Okay. Thank you, Cindy.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. And our last item is the tree replacement program and how it coordinates with the tree committee. Is this you? Who's doing that one?
Why don't we let Jamie lead?
Okay. That was his question, so let's
I'll
let him start.
Turn my mic on for you.
Okay,
now.
Good.
Yeah, how's
good.
That? I asked to bring this forward. My concern, we had a couple projects before the commission that discussed a two-for-one tree replacement, and in our staff reports, we really didn't have any references to help guide us on what was a proper replacement. However, as I brought this forward at our last meeting, Mr. Livick approached me after the meeting, and we discussed some a specific resolution that we actually have in place. The concern here is, was this arbitrary? And if we're, as a commissioner, I like to make knowledge-based decisions, and if we have, and consistent ones. So, having two projects came before us, I didn't really have anything to reference what was guiding a two-for-one tree replacement and how far we wanted to take that, and is that adequate? So, realizing we had a tree committee in place, I just wanted to bring that forward. Having said that, I've reviewed this resolution, and it seems adequate. However, it's not necessarily, it's just a guideline. There's nothing that really binds anybody or anything, any project to this. So that kind of concludes where I'm at, if you have any questions regarding that.
Okay, anyone want to comments or questions on that?
I have a question. What you mean by arbitrary? If it's in a city guideline that it says two for one, are you saying that's no document?
I wanted to go forward with that and find out, well, how are we consistent with that in the city? And really, if we're requiring this on projects, you know, is 2-to-1 adequate? For or against? Is it not adequate enough, or should we be pursuing more or less? But like I say, having reviewed the current resolution that was provided to me by Mr. Livick, you know, I think we're probably adequate. However, I would have been explained that this is just a guideline. There really isn't anything that binds us to that.
So just to clarify, so you were hearing the reference 2-to-1. You didn't know where that came from. But now you know where it comes from.
Yes.
But it sounds like there was an evaluative component to what you're saying as well. Is like, is this sufficient, or is this working, or is it appropriate? Is that a second question you're asking, or am I making
exactly.
that up?
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, ask yourself the question, is 2-to-1 adequate, and how do you determine is 2-to-1
okay.
adequate, regardless of the tree? And, you know, there's some information that kind of guides us through that.
And so are you asking the tree committee to look at that?
I think I'll back up a little bit. We discussed this at our planning commission meeting, and it got agendized. However, following the meeting with discussion with Mr. Livick, and then actually following up with Kathleen, I obtained this resolution that pretty much covered everything, all my questions. So at this point, we do have something that guides us, but there again, it is strictly a guideline. There's nothing there that is codified, let's say.
Noah, do you have a response to that?
Actually, I did just want to highlight that point exactly. As I see it right now, and as we've talked informally at the tree committee about what we have in place, these are guidelines, and so in that case, it is somewhat gray and is presenting kind of a loose recommendation to developers, homeowners, whoever it is that's bringing a project forward, and I think therefore is somewhat confusing. If we could make it more formal and actually go through the process of codifying some regulations like the City of St. Louis has done, we would be much more.
This property. Or where do the other trees go if, in fact, too many trees would be a danger to the habitat or the area? You know, if you pack them in too close and they can't grow too well. So I think we needed maybe some clearer guidelines as to how that works.
As far as the replacement process?
Yeah, when do you require the replacement all on the property? And where do you put them otherwise?
Mm-hmm.
in parks, on city streets.
Do you have a comment on that, Mr. Levick?
The 2-to-1 replacement is a pretty common replacement ratio for trees to be replaced at. Many cities use that. I think typically it's intended to be on or near the site that the trees were removed from. The case that I think in particular, there's another reviewing agency that will look at their landscape plan and determine what can be there or not. I think either Coastal Commission or Fish and Game will be looking at it. So the Planning Commission recommended that they be placed on the adjacent property. If there's not enough room there, then move into other places with on city property that needs replacement trees, for example, city street trees that they could be used to replace there. But I think that is more of a project by project condition that needs to be set, because we don't know the particular site constraints of every project. So it may be setting up the hierarchy for where trees get placed if there is some future ordinance direction, the hierarchy, but maybe not setting the firm numbers on, you know, all of them have to be on the site itself. That would just be one of my recommendations. But I think our Citizens Tree Committee is a very valuable resource that is very excited about trees right now. We should be taking advantage of that resource and that excitement.
Rick, you have a comment?
Well, it seems to me there's other questions and things that go into it too. Like, if it might have more clarity if we can maybe take that Coisers project and look at it. And we talk about, okay, those eucalyptuses in the middle would have to go. 2-to-1, I don't have a problem with that. I think, you know, that's. We could do that, but again, you have to talk about the types and the locations, and each project is different.
I wonder if this doesn't go back to a broader issue, and that is, if you're uncertain because there aren't guidelines on, in this instance, trees, do you feel as a commission that you can't take action, or do you know that you have the liberty to do whatever you want? I mean, do you understand that?
I think within
the law, and that you should take the initiative to do those things because you are representing the community and their values.
I would respond to that, and I think it speaks well from all of us as a commission during discussion to help us through those decisions. The expertise is broad. Having said that, I don't claim to be a tree expert, and it goes back to my initial question in this. Without seeing any kind of guideline in this, I think there's, for me, I'm no different than Mr. Diodati discussing the focal point of pro-con issues as a commission, because that's what we're focused on, and we review all those. So without that guideline, I'm cautious about just making an arbitrary decision without some sort of. I'm cautious about making that arbitrary decision. I'd rather have a knowledge-based decision when I do that. So, can you make, you know, those judgments? Certainly. Go ahead.
Well, as long as you're not interpreting knowledge as just expertise, certainly staff is here for expertise, but
absolutely,
you're here to represent the values of the community and to say, does this fit? You know, is this appropriate? For me, that's more of the question.
At the same time, I think I understand what they're saying. They really do need guidelines to work from. Otherwise, it's going to be a free-for-all in every single project. You've got to have something that's consistent in where you start, at least.
Yeah, I just want to say, I think it's important that staff has adequate guidelines to talk to the designers and the applicants, because sometimes they've gone to a great extent to get things put together with whether it's a subdivision plan or an individual lot plan, and these are not inconsequential cost items that we would put on. So I wouldn't want it to be arbitrary that we put on. But I do think we have a sense sometimes. I can think of two or three I'm not going to remember exactly which case, except for the
give us some housing. Our first preference in the our ordinance has always said we want that on site. We don't want the rich here and the poor there. We want eclectic. And so if at all possible, we want it on site. If not, then you do it somewhere else that's close by or at least within the city boundaries.
I think one thing that might help would be if we're going to look at guidelines and improving the guidelines, to have it written that it's the Planning Commission, not the builder, who will make the decision about where the trees need to go. And I think the builder, whoever's doing the project, needs to do know this up front, that they don't have options about that 2-to-1 ratio, that Planning Commission, working with staff, will make their best decision, but it's our decision, not the builder's.
I guess I'd worry about that. If you've got a project that you've brought in with landscaping plans included and everything, and it, your drainage and all of that has been considered, and then to have the Planning Commission say, well, we'd rather have a tree over here, I'm not sure that that's helpful.
No.
And I would turn to those of you who do projects. Am I speaking correctly? Or?
Well, they have to submit a landscape plan.
I'm asking them first.
So often we don't get, I hate to say it, adequate landscape plans. Mm-hmm. It may just not be clear to people who are doing projects that they have to be aware of trees and where they put them and how many they put there.
Jerry, can you weigh in on that as someone who's done this?
Well, I think they're pretty much going to be aware of it from staff. You know, that's one of the first things that's going to be coming from the staff, is that there's a 2-to-1 replacement value. Now, when, you know, in the planning stage is when you make those decisions. So we're in the concept stage of the plan is where those decisions need to be made. If we're getting it at the precise plan, it's a little bit late in the process. That's why I would rather see the landscape plans earlier in the concept phase than in later is in the precise plan. So, and I think that's one of the problems we've had with projects coming before us, is a lack of documentation, a lack of completeness of the plans. And so I would rather see the plans be more complete and more thought out. Then they've spent less time and less engineering costs on them at that point, so they're easier to make changes on. So it's less costly.
Is the ordinance not written that the landscape plan is submitted with the concept plan, or does the ordinance state it the other way? I'm asking the question, so do we need to change the ordinance, or do we just need to enforce what's there?
From what I've seen, we've gotten it both ways.
And but you don't know how the ordinance reads?
No.
Okay. Ms. Wall, do you know how that reads? Do you know how that reads, where the landscape plan is submitted? Is it in the ordinance? Does it state in the concept or precise plan?
No, can you answer? Precise? Okay. You're talking precise. Okay. What I was going to say to you, though, is that you're talking about kind of two different things. Is you're talking about we're trying to get people to acknowledge when they're removing
right.
trees.
Right.
So the first step is getting people to identify which trees are removing, identify them as either major vegetation, which triggers your guidelines. And what planning staff's been trying to do is acknowledge that we're kind of trying to get trees for trees replaced. We don't want people taking down raptor trees or very large trees, and trying to meet this 2-to-1 ratio by planting substandard, or we would consider not like kind, for the same trees. And since they've removed a lot of trees like Black Hill, and they're putting in a lot of houses, we know there's not as much room. So we're just trying to, that's why it was kind of presented the way it was to you, and I think the idea was to, at the best attempt, try to get the same type of trees that were there before, but then acknowledging if we can't, is there a place in the community where those trees can exist and so we keep a same habitat or whatever was using them before? Because what we don't want is that habitat to hide, or that type of tree to actually evaporate from the community. So if the actual builder can't fit them on, so you'll see with some of the projects coming up, like with the Cerritos Hill project or Jordan Terrace project coming up, that is clearly identified which trees are being removed and what it actually needs for major vegetation, although there won't be necessarily a replanting guide. If that's what we're hearing from you, that's what we want, then I guess that's what we'll have to start taking in from people. But we've tried to
more discussion on this one? This has been helpful, I think.
I would like to give a brief update because at the Citizens Tree Committee meetings, we have talked about this, and one of the places that we went to look at what's been done in other communities is the city of San Luis Obispo, which we as at the Tree Committee felt like the city of San Luis Obispo would be a great place to start, so we didn't have to start from scratch. As the Tree Committee, we have just this week submitted our recommendations to the community that actually came out of our last Joint Planning Commission Council meeting regarding the heritage tree or landmark tree concept. We've been working that through our Tree Committee meetings for the last couple of months, actually longer than that, and we have a recommendation to the Public Works Advisory Board this Wednesday. It'll be presented there. The concept would be they're going to talk about the idea and move it on to the Planning Commission for your review, and ultimately it'll come to the Council for final approval if that's as far as it goes. So we're going to run the process that with the landmark tree concept, see how that goes, how the Tree Committee's recommendation is received by the boards, and at that point we would certainly be happy to start to dig into the much more complex discussion about codifying regulations for trees. The other thing that we've included in that submittal to PWAB is an update of the city's master tree list, which is fairly old, and we have some members of our Tree Committee that were actually involved with the initial draft of what we're currently using. So there's some good carryover and continuity there. So that's my update on the Tree Committee.
I have a question. Does the Tree Committee maintain a list of needs and wishes for tree replantings?
We do, actually, and thanks for reminding me. One of the things that we've tried to fill in and support staff and the community with is replanting mostly in the downtown corridor street trees. And we did have recently a couple of the eucalyptus along Main Street and Morro Bay Boulevard area go down over the last storms, and a couple because what appears to be disease. And you're starting to see more and more of the eucalyptus along those main boulevards showing signs of their age. So what we have done is we coordinated one tree planting for street trees along Quintana last year. We're planning on doing another one at the end of this month to fill in and spot plants in the vacant tree wells in the downtown corridor. So that's something else that we've thought a lot about, and we're here to help when it comes to that. The resources on the Tree Committee include a lot of local landscape professionals. So in any way we can be of service, we invite the recommendation or invitation to get involved and pick up a shovel.
Because I think what happened on the Black Hills project was when we realized there's going to be the needs of the Tree Committee are met.
I think we'd be safer because the Tree Committee is an unofficial committee. We're a bunch of pirates, basically, just getting involved. I would suggest that was focused through city staff, and we could get the recommendation that way. Would that be the most appropriate process for us to undergo at this point?
That would probably work the best. And like, reiterate again, is the goal is to get the trees as much as possible replanted as close to the site or on site as possible.
And if I could just jump back to the downtown trees that are being replaced, and maybe this is part of the downtown visioning, but as these trees die, I don't think that, and talk about arbitrary, who gets to decide what trees go in? Are we going to lose the flowering eucalyptus view that we have downtown? Many people hate that because of their droppings. Other people think it's drop dead gorgeous because of when they flower twice a year. There's no other beautiful sight as you sit at the top of Morro Bay Boulevard and look down towards the ocean. So I think that whole picture is something that the Planning Commission, if not this Visioning Commission, needs to address, because if those trees are dying and they're going to get replaced, that totally changes the view of the boulevard and Main Street.
And as our recommendations for the updated master tree list work their way through the Public Works Advisory Board to the Planning Commission to the Council, that's going to be one of the very questions that we'd like to hear from. We've recommended some adjustments to that list to focus more on California natives, drought tolerant, agricultural heritage trees, and so on. You'll see that list. But we really do want to hear that input about what you think would be the most effective way for us to focus the plantings, because, as I said before, it is very clear that our downtown tree canopy and the flowering eucalyptus are fading as you look at their health right now. And so we really need to make sure that we've got a good focus program for replanting, and we're not going to lose the canopy that we currently have in the downtown corridor, which is so important.
And on the downtown enhancement project, the trees and their canopy will be a major focus of the streetscape. So another issue that came up that John brought to my attention was, would the city council like to either appoint or approve the advisory committee, or is there any members that they would like to see on the advisory committee for this project?
For the downtown visioning?
Yes.
I'd have to appoint, but if it's a subcommittee to a committee, I don't think we would have to do that to you.
Well, it's ad hoc,
yeah.
And if you want official people on there, we probably need to do that.
Right, but we have Noah on it already.
But
so we could have
did
one
we
more.
Ever vote for Noah to be on it?
Yeah, we did. Okay. He's official.
Okay.
So I think from there you can do your own.
So if any member has a recommendation, we'd be happy to accept that.
Okay. The one thing I would hope, just going back to the tree conversation for a minute, is especially as far as the downtown visioning, there's other trees that can recreate a canopy which would not create the pedestrian danger and the sidewalk problems that those particular trees do. I know people love them, but they really do. Maintenance to those sidewalks and people slipping on the little pods is a serious issue. So I know there's other trees that can be real pretty. I hope you can look at that too.
A nice touch with what we're doing in the downtown tree planting area, an effort at the end of this month, is we've gone and walked most of the downtown business district where there are vacant wells and approached the businesses in the proximity of those wells. And the ones we've been able to touch base with directly, the owner, manager, they've all said they would like to adopt the water responsibility for those trees. And we have a few more that we need to make sure we get back in touch with. So that's going to be a nice element, because it is a challenge. It's a lot of work to get these trees through their first couple of years as they're young. So we're highlighting those businesses and really making sure they are appreciated for
May
pitching
I make
in.
One more comment or question? While you're down there checking out those wells, how about planting something in them besides weeds and dog stuff?
Well,
there are a couple
trees
downtown that are around the trees.
Oh, actually,
if you look in front of the Thai restaurant, for example,
exactly,
they've got that lovely rosemary out there, and it just makes such a difference. You know, just a hint, a suggestion.
Yeah, that's the example that we've been thinking is a really nice touch. So
is part of your discussion going to be the surface area at the base of the tree, using that pliable material or grates or stuff like this, so it's not blowing up the sidewalks all over the place?
That will be a part of the streetscape discussion.
One more thing I just thought of. Thank you for reminding me. Has anybody
in them? Because they're like a puzzle. Once you take them apart, they're not quite as easy to get back together.
That reminds me, after the meeting, there's one I got to tell you about. Okay. Anything else? I just want to say thank you for all the work that you do, for bringing up the suggestions for these topics, and really appreciate it. Okay. And with that, unless there's any further comments, we're adjourned.